The Sedra this week speaks about the Machlokes of Korach, Korach's rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu's choice of Aaron to be the Kohen Gadol. And in that respect, he questioned the entire authority of Moshe and the authority of the Torah that Moshe gave. And later on in Sefer Dvarim, the Torah says, Lo yiye ke Korach v'chol adoso. Some learn that that is a general prohibition against being a Baal Machlokes, of causing dissent and arguments. And others learn that it's specifically a prohibition of rebelling against the kahuna and questioning the right of the kohanim, the God-given right of the kohanim to be the spiritual representatives of the Jewish people when it comes to making sacrifices and all the other laws of the kohanim. So we see that the prohibition of causing dissent or whatever centers pretty much around this idea of, or the foundation of it at least, was the dissent against the God's choosing of the Kohanim and questioning that right. And we can ask the following question. God intervened. When Korach came and questioned the Kahuna, God intervened in a miraculous way and destroyed the congregation of Korach and upheld what Moshe Rabbeinu had done and upheld the fact that the Kohanim were chosen by God and so on. Yet later on, when the Malchus was split and there was a question of dissent against the royalty of David, not only didn't God squelch the rebellion or the dissent and the questioning of the right of the kings of the Davidic dynasty from being the kings, but God himself promoted it and created two kingdoms of Yeravam and Rehoboam, right? That the kingdom split, and there was the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Yehuda, with the descendants of David on that throne. So why was it so important to squelch the dissent against the kahuna, whereas the dissent against the Malchus wasn't so important to squelch, and even though it had very, very serious and bad effects, but for some reason the Rabban Shalom didn't feel that that had to be squelched and destroyed at its root. So I want to explain the following. The whole concept of kahuna, okay, is a foundation of what Torah altogether is in this world. What it means to keep the Torah, what it means to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. The idea of kahuna tells me that God is the one who creates a tafkidim, right, roles in this world, okay, and God is the one who creates the framework within which one can connect to him and serve him and relate to him. And it's not up to the person to decide what his role is or within which framework he functions and what framework will bring him closer to God. God is the one who determines all of that. Man functions within the framework and role that God gives him. But the roles and the framework is God's doing. And the whole idea that originally the Bechoros were the one to serve in the sacrificial service or whatever, and they became possible because of the Chet HaEgel, because of the sin of golden calf, and God decided therefore that he's replacing them with the Kohanim, that's God's domain. People don't make those decisions. And really, that is the whole Torah. The Torah tells us that our goal in this world is to get closer to God, to get closer to him in this world, so we will have a tremendous cleaving to him and attachment to him in the next world. Okay, that is the purpose of creation. It's the purpose of the world. And God gave us a Torah to define for us how we do that. It's not up to us to decide how we get closer to God. It's not just a free-for-all, right? Get closer to God. Everybody has their idea of how to get closer to God. This guy plays a guitar, and this guy, what's it called, stands on his head, and this guy sits on the ground and contemplates his navel for the month. Everybody has their idea of how to get closer to God, and do your own thing. No, God gave us a Torah. And the Torah delineates roles. There are goyim in this world, they have 7 mitzvahs. There are Jews, they have 613 mitzvahs. Amongst the Jews, there's kohanim, there's levim, there's men, there's women. You have to understand that God creates the framework. And God created the framework of how women are supposed to get closer to Him and how men are supposed to get closer to Him. It's not our domain to decide what the framework can be and to do whatever we want. We have to accept the framework that God gave us, which is basically the Torah, and work within that framework. Okay. That is what the kahuna represents. And therefore, someone who questions whether God can create the role of a Kohen, who is the one who works to attach us and connect us to the Rabbanu Shalom, and we work under the Kohanim, together with their role, in the way that God outlined for us, is questioning the whole authority of the Torah, questioning the whole purpose of this world. And therefore it had to be squelched. Questioning the Malchus is not questioning necessarily the whole purpose of the world. It had bad effects. It's a negative thing, but the entire purpose of the world isn't dependent on it. Okay. And that's what happened with Nadav and Avihu. Right? They decided that they're going to do what they want to do, their way, and it can't work like that. You can't attach yourself to God and serve God except His way. And that was the whole Chet HaEgel. The sin of the golden calf was they wanted to attach themselves to God, but they wanted to do it their way. They decided how they're going to attach themselves to God through this Egel, which is like a receiving station of God's influence. But you don't create the receiving station. I create it, says the Rabban Shalom. You turn it on. You fine-tune it. But you don't create the station. I make the stations, says the Rabban Shalom. And therefore, the ketores, the incense, is a symbol of this in many ways. Okay? First of all, the incense is something that is the symbol of Kohanim. How do I know that? Because the incense was brought on the inner altar, the golden altar, which had a crown around it. There were 3 kelim in the Mishkan that had a crown. The Aron had a crown. The Shulchan, the table where the bread was on, had a crown, like an ornamental crown around it, yeah. And the Mizbeach Hazav, the golden Mizbeach. And the Sfarim say that the crown around the Aron was Keser Torah, the 3 crowns that people can get. The crown of Torah, the crown of royalty, Keser Malchus, that was the Shulchan. The Melech is the one who provides the physical wherewithal of the Jewish people. Right, so the Shulchan represented the influence of bread, of the physical things in the world, material things in the world. And the Mizbeach HaZov, which was the incense, only incense was brought in that altar, is Keser Kahuna. That was the crown of the Kahuna. So you see that the sacrificing of incense somehow has a tremendous connection to Kahuna. In addition to that, the Kohen Gadol, once a year on Yom Kippur, went into the Holy of Holies. What did he do there? He brought ketores. So you see that the apex of Kahuna, once a year on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol doing what he represents, the ultimate of the epitome of Kahuna, is in the Holy of Holies, is ketores. Okay. What?
Is that the word you're looking for?
Ketores. What?
Climax.
Could be. Climax. But the epitome, the apex of it. Now, the ketores has a lot of things about it that needs to be explained. One is that it says the Ketores is both an elixir of life. It brings life. In this week's Sedra, Aaron HaKohen made the Ketores. He sacrificed the, it burnt the incense, and it stopped the plague. And yet, it says that it was the incense that they brought in trying to become Kohanim, the Levium, that killed them. Because there's a samamovis, there's a poison, there's a something deadly in the Ketores. So is it deadly or is it life-giving? That's one thing. Secondly, it says in the Medrash Tanchuma that the Ketores is the most precious offering. Because all other offerings atone for something. They're involved with some kind of atonement. But the Ketores, it doesn't atone for anything. It's brought for simcha, for joy. It's a symbol of joy. We'll see what that means. And the same thing goes with the lighting of the candles. The lighting of the menorah in the Mishkan was also for joy. It didn't atone for anything. It was a symbol of joy. Joy, we'll see what that means. There's only one problem. The Gemara says that the Ketores was mechaper on Lashon Hara Shebechashoy. There's two kinds of Lashon Hara. The Lashon Hara that you speak vocally and the hidden Lashon Hara. And the private hidden Lashon Hara has the kapara of the Ketores. The incense atones for that. The Gemara says. And the open vocal Lashon Hara, the me'il that the Kohen Gadol wore that made noise, that had bells on, that was the me'il was mechaper. So, it says here that it is mechaper, there is a kapara. And yet the Medrash Tanchuma says that the Ketores is special because it doesn't come to atone for anything, comes only for simcha. So does it atone, doesn't it atone? The Zohar says that of all the sacrifices, the Shlamim is the most precious because it connects the upper world and the lower world.
What's the Shlamim?
The Shlamim is a peace offering, but it means the following. What a Shlamim is a sacrifice that a small portion is burnt on the altar, a portion of it the Kohanim eat, and the largest portion the person who brings the sacrifice eats. So here it's an achdus. It unifies. The Mizbeach gets its part, the Kohen gets his part, and the Bailim, the owners, get their part. So it unifies the spiritual and the physical. Everything becomes one. So a Shlamim is very precious because it's a sacrifice of unity. But the Ketores is even more precious than that because the Ketores comes for simcha, joy. Okay, now, let's explain what that means. There's the idea, right, that the Ketores brings God joy. What brings God joy? It says in the pasuk, Yismach Hashem b'ma'asav. God is happy with his creations. Meaning, God created the world for a purpose. And when everything works harmoniously to serve that purpose, basically to unite under him and fulfill his will, then God's happy. Happiness means everything is working perfectly, harmoniously, that's happy. That's when a person's happy, when there's no conflicts, everything is harmonious, his life is harmonious, and he's fulfilling his purpose, and everything is in perfection, that's happiness. That's why real happiness can only be in the next world. Because this world is not a place of perfection. But in the next world, which is a perfect world, there we'll be happy. But God is happy when his creations work together harmoniously in fulfilling his will, and therefore it's the perfection of what he created them to do. And therefore, the Ketores represents this unity, where everything does its part harmoniously with everything else, and serves God, serves his purpose in this world unanimously. And therefore, the word Ketores, the Radvaz says, comes from the Aramaic word lekater. Kater means to tie. The Ketores ties it all up. It ties it all together. It ties everything together, and that is the ultimate simcha. And that connects the physical world and the spiritual. What's incense? You take physical things, and you burn them, and you turn them into something spiritual. So that unites the physical and the spiritual. And the aroma that the Ketores makes, right, affects the neshama. Because it says, why do we make a bracha on besamim? Because it's dovrish on neshama nehenisbo. Kol ha neshama to halel ka, right? Something that the neshama enjoys. The neshama enjoys besamim, samim, right? Torah, incense. How do I know that? Because when you lose your neshama yisera on Shabbos night, what do you smell in order to revive your neshama? Besamim. You smell, right, a nice aroma that comes from, like incense. Not mamish incense, but it's like incense. Okay.
I think the neshama, the smell is supposed to give Hashem.
And I'll say one second. It gives a God happiness because the idea is it unites everything, physical, spiritual, material, under God. That's why it says there are 11 components in the Ketores. It says in the Medrash that 10 of them correspond to the 10 Mamoros which with the world was created and the Aseres Hadibros, the 10 commandments. And the last one is the one that now unites them all into one. So, on that level, what does it mean? The Aseres Hadibros represents the spiritual world, right? God's mandate of how to use this physical world properly. The Asara Mamoros is the physical world. God created the physical world. So the 10 components of the Ketores represent the physical world and spiritual world, and the 11th is that all of it now comes together. And it comes together by taking the physical, material components of the Ketores, burning them, turning them into something spiritual. So you take the physical and turn it into spiritual. And not only that, it says that the 11th one, 10 of them smell good. The 11th one by itself smelled bad. But it was together with all the others, even the bad smelling one brought out the good smell of the other ones. From there we learned that if you have a public fast day, Tainus Tzibur, and you don't include Rishoyim, wicked people in them who want to come and fast too, it's not a Tainus Tzibur. Because in the Ketores, one of the Samamonim, the 11th, was smelled bad. And that's why Tzibur is Tzadik, Beinoni, Virasha. That's the Tzibur. Tzadik, Beinoni, Tzadikim, medium, average, and Rasha. But it's not Tzadik, Beinoni, Rasha. That would spell Tzabar. Okay, but Tzibur, you have to put the Vav, Virasha. When the Rasha wants to attach himself to the rest of Klal Yisrael, then even the wickedness in this world has a purpose. And then everything is united unto God. And that's what the same thing on Yom Kippur. That's a Tainus Tzibur. Tainus Tzibur is where a person directs his physical being to attach to the spiritual by not eating. So he takes his body and attaches it to the spiritual, and that's a Tzibur. Everybody united, all the different parts of the creation, including the evil, unite under God. That's the ultimate, what's it called? The ultimate Ketores. So it's compared to the 10 Samamonim and the one bad one, and that's a Tainus Tzibur. And if you think about it, what's it called? That is exactly what happens on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, everything unites. In fact, the Medrash says the Yom Kippur is called Yom Echad, one united day, even the evil. We send a sacrifice to the Satan, right? We include him also. So even the evil on Yom Kippur becomes one, right? It's the ultimate unity under God of what's going to be. And that's why the Ketores was brought every day, twice a day, and there were 365 portions, right? 368 portions, one for each day of the year, and three extra ones which the Kohen Gadol brought Erev Yom Kippur and ground them so they would be extra fine to bring on Yom Kippur. Now, we don't have a year of 365 days. We have a year of 354 days or 380-something days, right, leap year. We have a lunar year. 365 days is a solar year. So why does the Ketores correspond to the solar year? Secondly, we have another place where we have something corresponds to the solar year, the Satan. HaSatan in Gematria is 364. That one day a year, the Satan doesn't have any powers, Yom Kippur. But our year isn't 365 days. Our year is 354 days. It's a solar year. Why is it Satan? Now the idea is the solar year represents this physical material world. And the Ketores represents taking the physical world, uniting it with the spiritual, and that's the purpose of the Ketores. So therefore it corresponds to the physical world. That's why there are 365 negative commandments, the negative things in the world. They also unite. And that's why the Satan is also connected to the 365 days, because the Satan basically is in this physical world. But on Yom Kippur, even he is united in service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's why it says that the aroma of the Ketores could be smelled from Yerushalayim all the way to Yericho, to Jericho. Now the word Yericho means to smell, aroma. Yericho, Reyach. Why? Because Yericho was the first place in Eretz Yisrael that was conquered, totally dedicated to God. Eretz Yisrael is the place in the world that connects the physical world and the spiritual world. In fact, the Ibn Ezra says that a person who owns a part, a plot in Eretz Yisrael, is as if he owns a part in the world to come. Eretz Yisrael unites the physical and spiritual world. The beginning of that conquering of Eretz Yisrael, to make that unity, was Yericho. The whole purpose of the Ketores is to unite physical and spiritual together, material and spiritual together. So where is the effect of that heard? In Yericho, which was the first place they conquered to bring the physical and spiritual world together in conquering Eretz Yisrael. Now, that is the simcha that God has on the Ketores. When is God happy? When everything works together in unison, harmoniously, and then he fulfills his purpose in creation. That's why he created everything, to be united under him. When there is disunity and dissension, then it's not connected to God, because God's one, and it's only when the world is one can it be connected to God. And when it's not connected to God, it's not fulfilling his purpose, he's not happy. That's what happiness means by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that is the happiness of the Beis HaMikdash. That's the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash. Purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is to unite everything, each one in their place. There's the Jewish people in Yerushalayim, and the Leviim on Harabayis, and the Kohanim in the Azara. Everybody has their place and their role, just like the 10 components of the Ketores. Each one was different, but Lamaisa, they're all united. They all work harmoniously, what you call each with the other. And that's why even Goyim have a place in the Beis HaMikdash. Beisi, Beis Tefila, L'chol Ha'amim. They have their place where they can be. They also can pray in the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash unites all people, all kinds of people, all kinds of Jews. There's an Ezras Noshim, there's a place for the women in the Beis HaMikdash, and there's a place for men, and a place for Kohanim, and a place for Leviim, and a place for Yisraelim, right? And God is the one who creates that framework, and everybody functions within the framework God gave them, but they function harmoniously with everybody else. That is what the Ketores represents. And that is what enables this to happen, the Torah. That's what the Torah is all about. The goal is what the Ketores represents, that unity. But how do you get to the unity? How do you know how to function? How do you know what your framework is? That the Torah tells you, specifically the oral Torah. Therefore, when did they make the Ketores? When they lit the Neros. The Neros, the menorah, is a representation of Torah Shebaal Peh, of the light of the oral Torah. When they lit the light of the oral Torah, it illuminated what everybody's role is in this world, what their framework is, and how to achieve it. At that time, you brought the Ketores, and once you have the means to do it, now you can get the end. So the Ketores and the Neros go together. And they both bring Simcha, right? And we'll see in 1 second a little bit more detail how that works. The Tzror HaMor says that therefore the Ketores is a sign that the whole purpose of the Torah is to perfect a person's neshama and in the world to come, and to attach him from this world to the next world eternally, which is exactly what we've said until now. That is what the Ketores represents. And therefore there's other things that it says about the Ketores that fit into this idea. The Radvaz says that the Ketores chases away the negative forces from the Beis HaMikdash. right? It's like, you know, it's Havdil. It's like spraying air freshener, right? It takes away all the stale odors. The Rambam says even more than that. He said if they didn't have the Ketores, the Beis HaMikdash would stink because they were making all these sacrifices. Do you ever go to the Shuk with one of these old Shava, the Arab butcher place where the meat is hanging? It stinks. It stinks from meat. It stinks. It's this rotten smell. Right, you'd go to the Beis HaMikdash, you have this rotten smell. So they had the Ketores. The Ketores was so strong, you could smell it in Yericho. It was the air freshener, Lahavdil, of the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam says this in Mor Nevuchim. Okay. And the Chinuch says that, on the more positive side, that you want to be inspired when you come to the Beis HaMikdash. So you want all of your senses to be uplifted. When you come to a place and you smell a really nice aroma, It gives you honor for the place. The place dignifies the place in your mind. It's a nice place. You feel good there, right? You feel good about the place. If you have a bad smell, you feel bad about the place. So it unifies all of your emotions and feelings to feel the honor and respect and dignity of the Beis HaMikdash. It all goes together. In order for a person to really attach to spiritual things, all the physical things have to be in place, right? You have something that's tremendously spiritual, great place, right? You have this great yeshiva where everybody's learning or whatever, but if there's a smell of decaying meat there and you walk in, you're not inspired by the tremendous Torah, you're pushed off by a terrible smell. But if you walk into that same place, and it smells good too, there's a nice aroma, and it's light and it's bright and there's candles, so then your sight and your smell and your hearing, everything unites. All the physical faculties unite with the spiritual faculties, and then it's really impressive. But if anything's missing, it loses its impression. So therefore, all of these things are to unite everything in service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. No faculty that a person has, whether it's a sense of smell, sense of sight, or whatever, is left out. It's all done in a way that enhances it, because then there's total unity. Then you can really appreciate the connection between the physical and the spiritual. Okay. And therefore, what's it called? What brought the Shekhinah into this world? When did the Shekhinah descend into the Mishkan? When they brought the Ketores. Because that is the unity of the spiritual and the physical, either in this world or next. That's why the Ketores is a Samachayim. What is Chayim? What's life? Life is being totally attached to God. V'atem ha-dveikim b'Hashem Elokeichem, Chayim kulchem hayom. Full life, okay, is only when you're attached to the source of life is God. Death is a separation between the body and the soul or whatever. So as long as that's why it says that there's something that has a good effect on the Ketores. When you pound it and grind it, you should be talking. Right? You should say, Hadeik, Hadeik, do it. What's it called? You should talk while you do it. Because I call Yofel Lipsamim. Because speech has a good effect on the incense. Why? Because that's what speech is. What is speech? Lashon. The Lashon is the tongue. Lush is one of the malachas of Shabbos. It's kneading, but it doesn't really mean just to knead dough. It means to take a solid, mix it with a liquid, and make a compound called dough. That's called lisha. Okay? Mixing a solid with a liquid and making a compound. That's what the tongue does. It takes the most spiritual thoughts and clothes them in sound waves, and in what's it called, in a language, and makes them something that comes out into the physical world. So those lashon is a lush, it's a kneader. It kneads between the spiritual liquid and the physical solid and makes them one. That's lashon. So therefore, since the Ketores' purpose is to unite everything, physical and spiritual, and that's what the tongue does, that's what speech does, so speech has an effect, enhances the Ketores. And that's why the Ketores atones for Lashon Hara. It's not an atonement. It's just the antithesis of what Lashon Hara is. What's Lashon Hara? You take your tongue, which is supposed to unite the physical and the spiritual, and you use it in a way that's ra, that's evil, that has no connection to the spiritual at all. And what's the purpose of the Lashon Hara? To cause dissension between people. And that's what Sinas Chinam comes from, Lashon Hara, the Chofetz Chaim says. So you're using your tongue, instead of uniting the physical and spiritual worlds through speech, and using your speech to unite the world under God, you're separating between the physical and spiritual, using your language in a way that is totally evil, and therefore not connected to the spiritual at all, and its result is to cause dissension in the world. So by bringing Ketores, you do the opposite. You have the antithesis of Lashon Hara. So what you cause pirud and separation with Lashon Hara, the Ketores, not that it atones for the sin, it takes away the effect. That's all. That's the atonement. Other things atone, they are a kapara. This is not a kapara. This takes away the effect of the sin.
It's like replaces.
Right. It corrects the problem. It doesn't atone for the problem. It corrects the problem.
Like the difference between
right.
The Band-Aid and the
right. Basically.
It cleans it up.
Okay. The and it's specifically the Lashon Hara that is silent. I always explain it doesn't mean whether you speak Lashon Hara out loud or you say it silently. Because the place we learn that the Ketores atones for Lashon Hara that's silent is when the Jewish people came and said to Moshe and Aaron, you killed God's people. You caused these Levium to die so they said it out loud. But the idea is there's two damages of Lashon Hara. One is that you hurt the other person. But the other is that you hurt yourself because you cause a separation between your physical and spiritual side. It's like death. That's why you become a Metzora. It's just like the Ketores is life and unity is life. Dissension is death. So you cause yourself death. It's like the silent killer that they call high blood pressure. You don't see the result, but it's if you speak Lashon Hara, it destroys your balance and harmony and unity, which is basically death. So that's why it's Mechaper specifically on the Lashon Hara that affects you, not how it affects other people, how it affects you. Okay. And that's why if somebody uses the Ketores as a means to enhance unity in the world, the Kohen, who is responsible for attaching the Jewish people to that's his role, attaching us to God, bringing the sacrifices. He's our agent and God's agent. And everybody does their part in harmoniously working together with the Kohanim. And they bring Ketores, then the Ketores enhances that unity and its life. But how about if somebody brings the Ketores and his purpose is to cause disunity? The opposite. Then that Ketores itself works against him. Because Ketores is anathema to disunity. So if you use the Ketores for the sake of disunity, it's a poison. It's a death. Because you're using it to promote something that's the antithesis of what the Ketores is. So in that respect, it's a samham avos. It ends up with death. It says also that the Ketores is what's it called? Bris Mila. A person who holds the baby during the bris is like he's bringing Ketores. The bris is like Ketores. Why? Because it also connects the physical to the spiritual. What's the bris? Take a sign in the body of a person that connects him to God. But it also says something else. It also says that God is the one who decides the framework. I chose you, you're a Jew. This is not a Jew. He has seven mitzvahs, you have tariq mitzvahs. And I make the framework. You don't make the framework. You don't even decide on it when you get bigger. It's done when you're 8 days old. It's foisted on you. You don't decide the framework in this world. I decide the framework. Right? I said you should put the sign. You're a Jew, and now you have responsibility. We didn't ask you. You didn't decide to do it. You didn't decide how to do it. You're 8 days old. All you get to do is cry and get hurt a little bit. Finished. That's it. Right? That is the... the idea. It could be, according to this, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Maybe that's why women don't have the need for a bris milah, because the Rabbanu Shalom gave them very clear framework for a woman, right? And women complain about it, but accepting the fact that you're a woman and saying Shosani Kirtzono affects the same thing as giving a bris to a boy. And the framework by a woman is also what's it called? It says that the blood of the covenant by a boy is one time, but a woman's monthly blood represents that. Why? Because that represents the whole cycle of reproduction, and that's the greatest framework that God gave to a woman. Because if you think it's not fair that you don't put on tefillin or tzitzis or have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go to davening, which I know a lot of men who would love to change places with you. But I always like to say the most unfair thing between men and women is, like, you know, when I got married, I told my wife, look, I want to be fair. So I am willing to get pregnant half the time, you get pregnant half the time. But never worked out, right? She's the one who had all the children, right? I was willing, 100% fair. Right, but that's not the way God made the world, and that's really not fair. I mean, what did I have to do? Make up a Dvar Torah for the bris or for the kiddush, right? Big deal, right? Today, because everything has to be equal, right? And this is really a sore point that you can't say it's culturally induced. Used to be men gave birth to children, but men, you know, what's it called? Culturally induced women to give birth to children. That's absurd. Right? Maybe a truck driver you could say that about, but not about having children. So it's not culturally induced. That's the way God made the world. It's really not fair, but that's God gives everybody their role to play. You're a goy, you're a Jew, you're a man, you're a woman, you're a Kohen, you're a Levi, you're a Yisrael. You work within the framework I give. You don't have a choice about it, right? But if you accept it and you say Shosani Kirtzono, right, and especially on that cycle of reproduction, then you don't need a bris milah once in your lifetime. You have it on an ongoing basis, the same idea. So, so that's why ketores and bris milah have a connection. It also says the ketores makes you rich. Every Kohen wanted to do the ketores because it makes you rich. What does that mean, it makes you rich? What's richness? Who is rich? A person's happy with his lot. So the ketores makes you happy with your lot, makes you a rich person. But in addition, it also connects the spiritual to the physical to the spiritual, and somebody who can take the physical and turn it to spiritual should have more physical things. He should be rich. So that's also another reason. Another thing it says about the Ketores is that the reason it was offered at the time that the candles were lit, because when the candles were lit, all of a sudden it's light inside the Heichal, and you could see. So the Kohen could go in and take a sightseeing tour. But that's not proper for the Shechina. The Shechina was in the Heichal. We don't want it to see. So you make a smoke screen so you can't see. So at the time that you light the candles, that's when you make the smoke screen. Same thing with the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Goes into the Holy of Holies. In order that he shouldn't go sightseeing and looking around, like it's a smoke screen, so you can't really see what's in there. What's the idea? The candles, we said, represent Torah. Torah is not to illuminate for God or just to sightsee. It's to illuminate for you that you should know how to function in the world. Therefore, the main light of the Beis HaMikdash, the windows were made in such a way that the light didn't come in, the light went out. The main purpose of that light was to guide you outside, not to light up the Mikdash. God doesn't need your lights, right? God illuminated us for 40 years in the desert with a pillar of fire. He doesn't need our electricity, our lights. Light. Please, could you light up my Mikdash, right? No. God could light it up himself. He doesn't need us. But he needs it to light outside. Therefore, when the candles were lit, don't ever make the mistake to think that you're enlightening God or you're getting just to see what it's all about. It's to guide you outside. Right? Therefore, the inside is a smoke screen. That works together, this idea of the Ketores together with the candles also. And therefore, since the whole concept of the Kahuna is really the basis of all service of God, God is the one who determines the roles of how to attach you to him. He chose the Kohanim. He said the Bechoros not. You have no choice in it. It's not something that you can, you know, make a protest and decide to change things. That's the way it is. And if you don't understand that, then there's no service of God. Then the whole Torah doesn't make sense. So God had to squelch the dissension against the Kohuna, the rebellion against the Kohuna. When it comes to the Malchus, to royalty, it's important, Dov and Amel, whatever, for this world. But it's not the entire this world, next world, an entire hierarchy of Torah doesn't depend on it, and therefore the Rabban Shem sometimes uses even that dissension to punish the Jewish people or to whatever. That's why machlokis l'shem shomayim means everybody knows their part and they contribute their part towards the common goal. Hillel and Shammai argued. Hillel had his opinion, Shammai had his opinion. They weren't the same. But the purpose was to harmoniously argue it out together to come to the truth. That's what the world is all about. Everybody using their unique part towards the common good. But machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim is where you argue and you don't like the framework that God gave and you want to make your own framework. And you want to do it your way. That can't be. So that's why God made such a big deal about the machlokas of Korach rather than the machlokas of the 2.5 shvatim, the 9.5 shvatim. That was serious, but not as serious as being cholik on the kohuna.
As
dissenting and rebelling against the kohuna, which is the foundation of what Yiddishkeit is all about.